Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I feel an enormous sense of gratitude that we are all coming together because where two or more are joined, the ego does not stand a chance. It's already done, that truth is, and our wholeness, our innocence is ours to claim. So let's begin our call, as we usually do, with just taking a few moments together for a brief period of meditation. And turning your attention within. If you'd like, if you're able, allowing your eyes to close. And just allowing your mind to sink down into a space within you. And it's a space that we all share. It's here that we feel joined, we feel connected with each other and with the truth. And connecting with your own sense of willingness to see differently, willingness to experience true perception, willingness to experience vision. And offering this willingness to Holy Spirit, trusting that the miracle is given, for we are entitled to miracles. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives, and we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge now and forever. So with a love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. This joining together is so important to reestablish the truth in our minds that may have slipped away if we've gotten caught up in externals and everything that's happening. And so I feel like just our time to join every Sunday night is just more important than ever. So in terms of page references, if you have the purple edition, the Circle of Atonement edition, the purple book, please go to page 885. The subheading is called The Cost of Idols. If you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, the blue book, the most widely distributed edition, please go to chapter 30, part 5 in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. It's called The Only Purpose. Again, that's chapter 30, part 5. In the Sparkle edition, it is page 692. It's also called The Only Purpose. And in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, which is the black book with the white pearls on it, it's chapter 30, part 6. So I'm trusting that whatever it is that we need to talk about tonight will come up. We are going to proceed with our regularly scheduled reading, and we can talk about, you know, whatever we need to talk about in the process of going through this text. So with that, let's begin. So I'm reading The Cost of Idols, or if you're in a different book than I am, The Only Purpose. And just a reminder that if you do have a different edition from what I'm reading from, the paragraph breaks might be a little bit different. No big deal. The real world is the state of mind in which the only purpose of the world is seen to be forgiveness. Fear not its goal, and the escape from guilt becomes its aim. The value of forgiveness is perceived and takes the place of idols, which are sought no longer, for their gifts are not held dear. I want to read that one more time. The value of forgiveness is perceived and takes the place of idols, which are sought no longer, for their gifts, quote unquote, are not held dear. No rules are idly set, and no demands are made of anyone or anything to twist and fit into the dream of fear. Instead, there is the wish to understand all things created as they really are. And it is recognized that all things must first, and it is recognized that all things must be first forgiven and then understood. I have to read that sentence one more time, that whole sentence. Instead, there is the wish to understand all things created as they really are, and it is recognized that all things must be first forgiven, then understood. Here, it is thought that understanding is acquired by attack. There, it is clear that by attack is understanding lost. And just a reminder, if you could mute your line by pressing star 6, that would be great. All right, thank you. So, I'm sorry, what's that?
I wasn't sure if I could be heard. Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay, yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. So there's a lot to unpack in this paragraph. And actually, I feel like this is relevant still to what's happening now, because I know for me, with everything going on, when worldly events happen that shake us to our core, when it feels like the rug is just yanked out from underneath us, it's giving us an opportunity to go deeper into this spiritual practice. It's an opportunity to go deeper and to release more deeply than we had before, because the only reason we are shaken is because we've tried to plant roots here again to make this home, and because we are identified as a separate self. Neither of those are true. This is not our home, and we are not a separate self. So what we are learning in this process as students of A Course in Miracles is not only to just learn who we truly are, but to start to see the real world, which is what this paragraph is all about. So the real world, it says, the first sentence in this paragraph, the real world is a state of mind. And it's a state of mind in which the only purpose of the world is seen to be forgiveness. Now, can we say that that's true right now in our experience? Do we walk around on a daily basis thinking that the only purpose that we're seeing for everything is forgiveness? Maybe we're getting there. Maybe we're opening up to that. But we might still wobble. And I actually have a really quick, funny story about this. I'm doing the lessons, my review lesson today. I'm engaged with, and today I've spoken many times before about challenging relationships in my family, and today a family member threw a couple of jabs my way, and I felt myself start to feel defensive and wanting to, speak up and defend myself, and it was an opportunity to practice my lesson and decide, do I want to abide and know my function, abide in my function, know my function, or do I want to hold a grievance? And the funny thing, I'm sharing this because it's just a testament to how orchestrated this is. When I decided that I'm not going to let this incident have me forget my function, which is forgiveness, when I decided that, I had a memory pop back into my head that when the jab that I felt like was thrown at me was based on an incident that happened several weeks ago, and it occurred to me, what lesson was I doing that day? Because that day, I remember coming to the same choice point and saying, I can see peace instead of this, or I can hold a grievance. And my lesson, it wasn't the exact same one as that day a few weeks ago, because I'm doing the review lessons right now, but it was yesterday's review lesson when this incident initially happened with this family member. So I was like, how funny is that I'm reviewing the same group of lessons, the same theme, and this exact same scenario comes up again with the same exact players, me and this other family member, and I had to make that same choice again. Am I going to side with my function, which is forgiveness, or am I going to go into, you know, defensiveness, attack, whatever? So the real world is a state of mind in which our only purpose is seen to be forgiveness. Now, with everything happening in the world, this coronavirus, because it's eliciting a lot of fear, that can propel us to be willing to see with forgiveness for everything, to be willing to see the truth behind the form. It can be a really great catalyst for that reason, to move forward in our spiritual practice rather than feeling like we're stuck in fear. And even if we feel stuck in fear from time to time, that's okay. We're still choosing, again, to come back to our willingness. So it's saying in the real world, fear is not its goal, and the escape from guilt becomes its aim. The value of forgiveness is perceived and takes the place of idols, which are sought no longer for their gifts are not held dear. So in other words, in the real world, this change of mind, forgiveness is what we value, giving everything over, being willing to see the truth, being willing to see past the picture, that takes the place of all idols. That takes the place of a quote-unquote lowercase g god of sickness. That takes the place of all of the things that we think that we need for our safety, all the things outside of us. And forgiveness is all that is wanted and perceived. So I love then how this paragraph goes on to say, no rules are idly set. No demands are made of anyone or anything to twist and fit into the dream of fear. Here, we are trying to make meaning out of everything and make it work for us, make it fit our demands, make it fit our desires, and it doesn't work. Instead, it says there's the wish to understand all things created as they really are. I want to pause there before I read the rest of the sentence. We, again, don't, in this level of form, don't understand everything as it really is. We've laid all of our projections, our perceptions, our beliefs on top of everything. That's what we see. So in the real world, there's a wish to understand all things as they really are. And it's recognized that all things must be first forgiven, then understood. Here, and again, I'm certain that you can relate to this because I know I can. There have been so many times when it's like, oh, I want to figure it out. Then I can let it go, or then I can forgive it, or then I can hand it over, or I'll find peace first if I can understand it. No, this is saying that we must first forgive. We must first give it over to the Holy Spirit. Then, you know, understanding can come. Here in the world, we think that understanding comes through attacking. There in the real world, it's clear that when we attack, we lose understanding. We lose awareness of the truth by our attack. So this is a super rich paragraph. Paula, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I kind of had a similar experience today with a family member, and I was really furious. But I had been working with the Course in the morning and read some really wonderful things. And for in the middle of this, you know, absolute rage, I just got this, I don't know what you would call it, this feeling came over me that there was absolutely nothing wrong. Nothing. Mm. Not with the situation that I had just experienced with this person or the coronavirus or anything.
Mm.
There was absolutely nothing wrong. Now, I still processed through some anger after that. And then it just went away. It just went away. And I wound up having a great time with that person later in the day.
Wow.
This is the Holy Spirit.
It is.
This is the Holy Spirit. The mind, I just read, the Holy Spirit is the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, even in the midst of my rage, I knew to turn to the Holy Spirit. In the back of my mind, it was like, oh, you can do this, but, you know, it would be a better idea to give it to him. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it was just kind of a miraculous thing for even one split second to get that vision of the perfection of it all.
That is awesome, Paula. I love your stories. I just love them because they're just relevant, I feel like, always to what we're talking about. And this story is just beautiful because it speaks to what forgiveness in course terms really is. Recognizing that nothing's wrong, nothing, and not on this level. It's a knowing that comes from behind what our body's eyes see. So our body's eyes are always going to report lots of crazy stuff. It's a knowing that even behind what are like cardboard cutouts of like all the figures that make up the world out there, it's a knowing that comes from behind that yeah. all is well. Nothing is wrong. And we are being trained to learn how to see with vision that is not from the body's eyes. So that behind the form, that feeling, that knowing of there being nothing wrong, that's vision to me. That's the breakthrough experiences that we have for the vision that we are being asked to learn how to use. So thank you.
I just thought to myself, yahoo! Sorry, that's enough for me. Here we go.
Thank you, Paula.
I'm mute.
Oh, I love it. Anybody have anything else to add so far? Anything that's come up for you? And
yeah,
you know,
Corinne.
Oh, yeah, go on.
This is Carl.
Oh, hi, Carl.
Hi. Well, I, you know, kind of related to what you were just talking about. In February, I took a job driving a, you know, a Medicaid tuck cab.
Mm-hmm.
And I... because you were talking about the body's eyes. Mm-hmm. And so on two, you know, I've been pretty much participating in a news blackout regarding, you know, the virus, although I do catch snippets here and there. But on Tuesday, I was driving, you know, things slowed down quite a bit beginning Monday, actually, even though, and I things slowed down Tuesday, and I stopped and parked in front of a gym that I am a member of, although I don't go to this location. But, you know, there was no cars in front of the gym, and there was nobody going in or out. And I just got, you know, I said, what's going on? You know, I mean, this is really, you know, because I had been to the gym on Sunday, and I didn't realize, you know, that the governor had ordered all the gyms to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, the boss called me and says, go ahead, take your break. And there was no place really near that I wanted to go. And so I went to a church, and I walked up to the church, and there's a sign on there that's saying, you know, there's not going to be any more masses scheduled until, you know, further. And I, you know, I didn't know about that either.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into the church, and I took a seat in the back, and, you know, I was kind of feeling pretty anxious. I'm almost feeling, you know, like, oh, I got the symptoms. I'm going to call, you know, I got to go home. I'm going to tell, you know. And then I'm sitting in the back of the church, and I get this, you know, there's a line in the course that says, you know, something about, I don't remember it exactly, but, you know, let the Son of God no longer see that things outside of him can disturb him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that line, you know, that I was seeing through the body's eyes, and my body's eyes were seeing things that, you know, in essence were not real, but, you know. And then the lesson, peace to my mind, let all my thoughts be still, just came and repeated over and over again as I was sitting there. And I calmed down and finished the day. And, you know, they called me into the office later and said, well, we're going to have to, you know, cut the workforce. And they gave us masks and gloves and everything, you know. And but I, Wednesday through Friday, I was really quite calm about the whole scenario, you know, much more so than I was on that particular day. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to get your take on this line from the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. Mm-hmm. It's on page 287, and it reads, yet you cannot know this, for by hiding truth and fear, you see no reason to believe that the more you look at fear, the less you see it, and the clearer what it conceals becomes.
Mm. So I opened up, I was able to just find that, so my eyes are reading the same sentence. I want to just read the sentence before that, and I'll read this to everybody. Under each cornerstone of fear on which you have erected your insane system of belief, the truth lies hidden. Yet you cannot know this, for by hiding truth in fear, you see no reason to believe that the more you look at the fear, the less you see it, and the clearer what it conceals becomes. So in other words, I feel like that sentence prior to the one that you just read really adds some clarification, because every fear that we have, every scary circumstance that is in the world is hiding the truth. It is, that's the purpose of the whole world. The whole world rose to be like a smokescreen to hide the truth from our awareness by our choice, because we wanted to play this separation game and experience ourselves as separate. So it's saying in that sentence, we can't, because now we're relying on our body's eyes, we can't know that love is hidden under fear, because if we see no reason to believe that if we're looking at fear, like if we're looking at coronavirus, we're you know, looking at all the fear that is surrounding it, we see no reason to believe that that could possibly be hiding love. So with this coursework, though, like I love how you sat in a church and you had course lessons come to you. That's beautiful. What you're allowing in that process is what is being concealed by the fear to reveal itself to you. So does that help clarify that sentence?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always a sentence that I've kind of, you know, referred to.
Uh-huh. Got it. Yeah, that's,
because,
that's a good one.
You know, if you're familiar with the writings of Ken Wapnick, mm-hmm. he says, and I have his Journey Through the Workbook volume,
uh-huh.
and he said, you know, it's not that we don't have these thoughts of fear, but and because he says we should look at these thoughts, you know,
mm-hmm.
we shouldn't
mm-hmm.
just hide these thoughts and pretend that everything's okay,
right.
but we should look at these thoughts and you know, and examine them for what they are, perhaps to see the falsehood of what they are, you know. So
right. Yeah, that's spot on. We need to look at them, but look at them with Holy Spirit. We get into trouble when we start to analyze them and look at them by ourselves. We need not hide them. We need to be able to acknowledge them, see them, bring them to Holy Spirit, bring them to the light. So
yeah,
that's great.
Right.
Thank you for that.
So
thank
yeah,
you so
that's
much.
What I've been doing, because you know I'm going to continue this work more on a part-time basis than previously. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, it's just so interesting with the, like, there's no getting away from this. It's invisible, you know, like there's nothing visible to avoid. It's an invisible thing. And so it's stirring the pot for the world, you know, it's shaking everybody up. And the interesting thing is that in the Ur-text of A Course in Miracles and Helen's handwritten notes. I love the urtext, which is what, you know, more editing was drawn out from. And in that urtext, Bill Thetford expresses fear surrounding the flu and it becoming an epidemic. And one of the things that you can glean from that, because Jesus is giving guidance, is Jesus actually says to, you know, like respect the experts. So because Jesus is meeting Bill where he's at, and the Holy Spirit, Jesus, is meeting us where we are at also. So I've been washing my hands, you know, I've been doing the things like, now you have a mask and gloves and, you know, you can follow the recommendations of the authorities while still holding the truth in mind. And
That's what I've been doing. I've been wearing the mask and gloves from, you know, and I've been talking to the authorities. When I went into the hospital and the nurse was there with a, you know, they're taking my temperature. They're all wearing masks. And I said, well, I'm picking up this guy. And I'm assuming since he's coming out of here that he's been checked out and I don't really need to wear. And so she said, yeah, you're right. You're good. And she gave me a thumbs up, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So good for you for just, you know, going along with it. I mean, I will say, though, too, like it's interesting to me just in our collective development, I don't believe that Jesus would have been susceptible to coronavirus. Like, I do think it is possible to walk in the world in such a state of mind, in such a high state of mind that, like, for instance, Peace Pilgrim, if anybody knows Peace Pilgrim, she was the woman who had no belongings and walked around the country for 30-something years just trusting that she'd be given what she needed. She would sleep. There were reports of her sleeping, and the mosquitoes would be in swarms and they wouldn't touch her. The mosquitoes wouldn't bother her. Like, I do very much believe that the more our perception becomes more in alignment with true perception and we start being able to actually have these experiences of vision, I do believe that, you know, you see sickness for what it truly is, which is nothing. I'm not there yet. So I'm following the recommendations of the authorities and I'm not going to feel guilty about that. I'm acknowledging that that's where I am, but I just wanted to throw that out there too, because I do think it's important to be clear about that, because otherwise it's saying two things, you know, like, oh, there is something that can hurt me and it's not real. And only one of those is true. So that's why I feel like this whole experience with coronavirus is enabling us to go deeper into this work to further develop our trust and further stand with both feet in the Holy Spirit's camp. Nook Sanchez was, I was listening to a recording of her. I consider her my teacher, and she says that the false self which fears, or the false self is the self that fears, and that self which fears is what needs to be surrendered. And that's pretty all-encompassing. Like, you know, when you're in fear, you can feel that. Like, that feels just very, like, attached to you. It feels very much a part of us. And that is the false self that we are learning that we don't want anymore, that we want to surrender, that we want to see differently. So I just wanted to throw that all out there. So thank you, Carl. That was great.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else want to jump in before we begin another paragraph? Okay.
Corinne, this is Jana.
Hi, Jana.
Real quick, I've been thinking regarding forgiveness, because in order to really understand, for me, in order to really understand any of this, I have to understand what forgiveness is according to the Course. And that's been a real mystery for me, and I've prayed deeply to the Holy Spirit to help me understand this. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually starting to, because I was so confused, because forgiveness isn't what I have always thought it was from my background. And I just want to put it out there for anyone who has struggled with understanding forgiveness like I have. Two of the YouTube videos that have been really helpful to me in understanding this is Ken Wapnick's video on, it's called Forgiveness. It's called Forgiveness, Ken Wapnick, Tape 2A is the title of it for YouTube. And then the other one is with David Hoffmeister, The Dreamer of the Dream Perspective is Forgiveness. And I just think those two videos, if anyone wants to, I actually listen to both of those at night a lot of times when I'm going to sleep, because I feel that the Holy Spirit sometimes can get through to me easier when I don't have my conscious part of me always butting heads with it, with the Holy Spirit. But I just, for right now, too, with everything that's going on in our world, to understand what really the Course is talking about forgiveness is so empowering.
Awesome. Do you have words to sum up what you've learned just about forgiveness, just since we can't obviously watch the videos at this moment, or does that feel like too much of a big question to answer?
And interestingly enough, and I think I've shared, I had a dream a year or so ago that actually explained forgiveness to me. And then I was introduced to these two videos, and basically the Reader's Digest version of my dream was that my mind was creating every part of that dream, and it had some really uncomfortable parts to it. It had fearful parts to it. It had angry parts where I felt that I was a victim, and then I became attacking, and all of it my mind was creating. And the forgiveness aspect of it, as I understand it from the Course, is I'm the dreamer of the dream. I'm the one that's creating the dream. And as I wake up, I start realizing that it is a dream. And with the help of the Holy Spirit, I can start dreaming happier dreams as I'm led to wake up. And that forgiveness is realizing that the people in my dream that I thought were attacking me never really attacked me. The events that took place in my dream never happened except in my dream. And as I hand over my mind for healing to the higher Holy Spirit self, and to Jesus, those parts of my mind that need healing will not continue to create these nightmarish dreams. And we collectively are creating this nightmarish dream of coronavirus, and it has nothing to do with being made to feel guilty that we're doing this or anything along that line. This is just where our mind is showing us where we need healing. And if I could just say this, because I think it's just so powerful, this keeps coming back to me in my meditation as well. We are called to be miracle workers, and for such a time as this. And our mind is so powerful, and when we connect it to the higher Holy Spirit, when we connect it to Jesus, that brings us to a place. And one of the lessons that keeps coming to me, I've been on it for a long time now because I find it's so much healing for me, is lesson 109 on I rest in God. And that my meditations, I imagine myself resting in God and opening the door for everyone that's fearful, everyone that's sick, everyone that's scared of finances, everyone that is whatever, everyone that the doctors that are exhausted, the nurses, the president, the administration, it doesn't matter what political viewpoint someone is, come with me. Rest in God, because that's where healing is. And that's where we start waking up to our power to change this dream and wake up into the reality.
Oh, Jana, I knew that was going to be helpful. Thank you. That's beautiful. I love your dream and your demonstration in that dream of what forgiveness is. That's perfect. Thank you so much. My little shortcut, my easy way of just remembering forgiveness is everything is forgiving to the Holy Spirit. And in that, that's then what happens, what Jana just described with recognizing that we are dreaming up this dream and nobody is attacking us. Everyone is innocent and our brother.
I thought it was just interesting that what she said, because I've been working with the Course Connection, one of the main things that they've been pointing out is how Jesus wants us to be miracle workers. And that's exactly what she just brought up. And that, at this point in time, is really what he wants.
Yes, yes, yes. And the important piece to remember with that comes the definition of the miracle that has been largely forgotten about. I will readily admit that I very much focused for a very long time on just the shift in perception definition, but far more frequently in the Course, it refers to miracles as expressions of love. So Jesus wants us to be out there expressing love, allowing love to extend through us, and that wakes up both us and our brother and all of us. So yes, we are called to be active miracle workers. As Bill Free said, I was on a support call about a week ago. Our training wheels are off, so now is the time to put into practice everything that we've learned. Obviously, we're continuing to learn, but we know enough now.
Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi, I just have a quick question, and it just came to me. So it may not even make any sense. But, okay, just hypothetical. What if we all wake up? Then what? And I'm going to go back on mute. That just came to me. What if we all wake up? Then what? I'm really curious to hear what y'all got to say. I'm going to go back on mute.
Okay, thank you, Joyce. I love that question. What if we all wake up? Then what? There's actually a lot to unpack in that question, but I'll sum this up in the best way that I can. When we all wake up, what is it that we're waking up to? We actually just read in this paragraph about the real world. So the next phase of our learning in waking up is first we wake up to the real world. We start to see the real world here. And I believe just from other teachings, I think one of the best stories that I know of, at least with my limited knowledge of different stories, was Ibn Alexander's near-death experience, where he described a world where there were people and animals and everyone was I'm hearing some background noise. If you wouldn't mind muting your line by pressing *6, that would be great. Thank you so much. Thank you. He was describing in his near-death experience that he was seeing the real world. It was a place where there was love and everybody radiated love. Everybody was, like this paragraph just described, tuned into how the only purpose is forgiveness. That's like the next phase is entering the real world. And then I do believe beyond that, we continue to grow back to God in to the degree to which we are ready. So fully waking up is knowing, being fully just love in a formless sense. I do believe there is still an awareness of self in a shared, it's like one and many at the same time in a way that we can't comprehend in our minds, but that's like, you know, ultimate, but we grow back to that. So when we all wake up here in this world, like as we all, you know, imagine everybody in the world doing A Course in Miracles. Like, could you imagine that? But if we're all doing that, we're going to be
there's going to be a lot of love. There's going to be a lot of expressions of love. And there wouldn't be a need, I don't think, to be in a world of form anymore, because we will still, we will know that this is, like, to leave this is to leave nothing. It's not a sacrifice. It's nothing. It's a dream, as Jana so beautifully described to us. We're going to want to be as we are in our reality. Nicole, I think you were just going to add something. Am I correct? And if I'm not,
yes, it takes me a minute to unmute. when you were, that was a great question, by the way, Joyce. And the way you explained it, Corinne, was fabulous. And as you were speaking, omnipresent came to mind, and that would be the best way to describe it, being mm-hmm. all places at once with everyone at the same mm-hmm. time. I don't know. It made sense to me.
Yeah, thank you. You know, and just as you were sharing, Nicole, I'll throw one more thing out there to answer that question. Another great account is to read Anita Morjani, her book, Dying to Be Me. I believe she had a second book as well, but she describes what it was like, basically how here it's as if we are so limited in our perception, this narrow perception. It's like we're only seeing what's under a flashlight. When she had her near-death experience, she described it as being in an enormous warehouse with the lights on. There was such an omnipresence and a knowingness that is lost here because of the limits of perception and the limits of, you know, being in a body with a brain. So thank you for your question, Joyce. That was great. Wonderful. Any other comments or questions before we read another paragraph? All right, let's read paragraph number 2. The folly of pursuing guilt as goal is fully recognized. So this, we're still talking about the real world. The folly of pursuing guilt as goal is fully recognized, and idols are not wanted there. For guilt is recognized as the sole cause of pain in any form. No one is tempted by its vain appeal, for suffering and death have been perceived as things unwanted and not striven for. Wow. Suffering and death have been perceived as things unwanted and not striven for. The possibility of freedom has been grasped and welcomed, and the means by which it can be gained can now be understood. The world becomes a place of hope, because its only purpose is to be a place where hope of happiness can be fulfilled. And no one stands outside this hope, because the world has been united in belief the purpose of the world is one which all must share if hope be more than just a dream. I just have to say, Joyce, it's really funny you asked that question, because I feel like this paragraph continues to answer your question about what next. So this, all these things that it just said are describing the real world. Now, again, I just want to draw out a few things from this paragraph. The folly of pursuing guilt as goal is fully recognized, and idols are not wanted there, for guilt is recognized as the sole cause of pain in any form. Number one, do we recognize guilt as being the sole cause of pain in any form? No, we instead say here that the cause of pain is outside of me. The cause of pain is in coronavirus. The cause of pain is in this coronavirus thing happening, so I can't go food shopping and I'm worried about finances. You know, the cause of pain is out there. This is a mistake. This is our mistaken perception to see the cause of pain outside of ourselves. All pain comes from guilt in our minds, you know, individually, and also, as I think Jana was saying, there's this collective piece as well, and it's the guilt for believing that we are separate from God, which we are not. So in the real world, it's recognized that pursuing guilt is a folly. You know, pursuing guilt as a goal is a folly. We don't get that here. What are we doing here? But we are pursuing guilt, and I have a perfect example. The example that I just named earlier about my family member throwing some jabs at me,
I wanted to make them, the defensiveness that arose in me, I wanted to make them guilty and be like, no, you're wrong. And I wanted to, you know, make them wrong. That's a form of pursuing guilt as goal. And in doing that, not only am I hurting them, but this is what we miss here. That hurts us. That now draws a veil down over my own eyes where I no longer am going to see the truth in them. I'm not going to see it in myself. So this, again, is why we don't get this in this world. This, you know, we do pursue guilt as goal when that's a folly. That's not what we want to do. I also love how it says suffering and death have been perceived as things unwanted and not striven for. So that indicates on this level, in this world right now, on some level, we are striving for suffering and death. Like, how backwards? Nobody in their right mind would strive for suffering and death, and nobody, I think, would say that I strive for suffering and death. And yet, when we are listening to the voice, the false voice of fear in our minds, we are striving for suffering. We are striving for death because that false voice is there to convince us that we separated from God. And we are going to prove that by dying. We are going to prove that we have separated from God by suffering, because God does not know death and God does not know suffering. So that's a really powerful sentence as well. It goes on to say the possibility of freedom has been grasped and welcomed. This is in the real world. The world becomes a place of hope. No one stands outside that hope. That's all just gorgeous. So I hope it's clear. Like, I hope you're able to relate to this as much as I feel like I'm relating to it, that we've got it backwards here. And through radical honesty and radical willingness and looking with, like, just complete defenselessness at our own ego, calling our ego out, being able to see, like, for instance, how I just said that I wanted to make this family member guilty. When that experience initially happened with them a couple weeks ago, as I referenced earlier, I literally had a moment where it felt like, and this is a course reference, it literally felt like I had thorns in one hand and lilies in my other hand, and I was not sure which one I wanted to give. I kind of wanted to give them the thorns, but as I said already, you know, I chose to not forget my function. So I just said a lot. Anybody want to hop in?
I just want to bring out a point that keeps coming to me on this paragraph, and it goes with everything that everyone has been saying. And it just struck me, the first part, the folly of pursuing guilt, and everything that guilt brings, the pain and suffering and death and our belief in it, is the nightmare dream.
Mm.
The possibility of freedom, we start waking up into a happier dream, the dream of where we're starting to believe, no, there is a way out, and I'm being shown that way out. And the dream becomes happier, because in the nightmare state, I don't remember exactly how it's phrased, but what I understand Jesus to say in the Course in Miracles is, in the nightmare state, we're not ready to be woken up yet because our fear is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
As we move into the happier dreams, we start seeing the possibility of freedom. And that's where we can really start seeing there's hope of getting out of this.
Right.
And we move into more and more hope. And as more and more miracle workers move into this happier dream, the world shifts. The world changes. We have such an important part in this.
We do. We do. And again, to just tie into that those expressions of love are just, that they move us along, they move us forward, they propel us forward. The offering that I was willing to give my family member when this first happened in my heart was just so great, that love was so great, that diminishes what you just said, that fear of awakening, that fear that is in our minds being so great that we're afraid to awaken, every little miracle, every shift in perception, every expression of love brings us closer and closer to wanting that, as you just said so beautifully, Deanna, to see that possibility of freedom and hope. Thank you.
I think it's really important, though, to get to that happy dream, to ask for Holy Spirit's help. Because
always
earlier when I was in, I was just so furious at this person. And I really made a conscious decision, even after that, just seeing that there was absolutely nothing wrong, I kept taking it to the Holy Spirit and decided consciously to process through what I was feeling and why I was so angry. And I swear to you, taking it to the Holy Spirit, he literally showed me the the absurdity of it.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed so powerful to me to be shown, and I wasn't even consciously aware of it while it was happening. As I look back on it now, I can see how my thoughts just started changing. And the perception started becoming brighter and better, and it's really hard to. It's more of an experience than something I could actually put into words. Mm-hmm. But by the time the Holy Spirit got through with me, I was in a much better place and was able to actually be with that person without any animosity.
Oh, that's beautiful, Paula. And yes, always. This is all about working with the Holy Spirit. This is all about, we can't, like, if Corinne tries to express love of herself, it's not going to go very far. If I turn to Holy Spirit and I am willing to allow that love, God's love, to come through me, that is big. You know, that moves both me and whoever, you know, whoever I'm willing to express that love to. I'll name my family member, for example. So, yes. To what you just said, Paula, it's always, always, always about turning to the Holy Spirit. If we try to do this by ourselves,
forget it.
Doing it with the ego, forget it. We're gonna fall flat on my face. You know, okay. So we have a minute left, and I want to leave you all. I want to share something that has been incredibly helpful to me over the past week since I learned about it. I'm someone who gets songs stuck in her head on repeat. I laugh because sometimes I'm like, this is such a defense against the truth, because instead of trying to, you know, have a quiet meditation and listen to the Holy Spirit, there's a song playing. And I found a song. I have a few favorites, but this one particular song, I've been listening to it on repeat. So now I know the words, and now this song is on repeat in my mind. It's been on repeat in my mind when I'm sleeping. If I wake up at, like, you know, 3 a.m. for a little bit, this is what is in my mind. And I just want to highlight the lyrics. So I'm going to share a link to this song in the From Anxiety to Love Facebook group. So if you're interested, you can find it there. If you aren't on Facebook, just email me and I can send the link to you. I'll tell you the name. It's called It Is Well by Christine DeMarco. So it's K-R-I-S-T-E-N-E, DeMarco, D-I-M-A-R-C-O, and it's called It Is Well. And I just want to read you, it repeats a lot, but it says, through it all, my eyes are on you. And she's talking about Jesus. So you can think about Jesus, you can think about the Holy Spirit, but just think about that. Like I've been really feeling into the meaning of these words, through it all, my eyes are on you. So rather than getting sidetracked down the road of fear, rather than spinning out based on the latest, you know, numbers of coronavirus, finding out that a professor that I work with tested positive that I happened to see, you know, I didn't see them. I'm sorry. Didn't see them around this time, but it was still a jolt to get that news. Through it all, my eyes are on you. So let us focus. Let us be single-minded in our focus of constantly keeping our eyes on Jesus,
on the Holy Spirit. And another, I mean, all the lines are beautiful, but there's another line that says, to let go my soul and trust in him. So let go my soul and trust in him. The waves and winds still know his name. So it's just, it's a beautiful song. Christine DeMarco has a gorgeous voice, and I will share the link to that in the Facebook group. You can just Google it, or if you want me to email it to you, I can do that as well. So I recommend, if you need any support, if you love music, this is a beautiful song to get stuck in your head and to really feel into the meaning behind the words. It's been incredibly, incredibly grounding for me. Oh, all right. We're at the top of our time. So again, like, big, big, big group hug. I love you all so much, and I just can't thank you enough for doing this work, for showing up, because this is healing the entire planet. This is healing the world. Our joining, where two or more are joined, fear just falls away. It has to, because it's not who we are. We are that love. So I love you all. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
We love you too.
I love you. Thank
love
you.
You.
Thank you.
Have
Thanks
a great
so
week,
much,
everybody.
Everyone.
Thanks.
Love you.
Thank you.
Love you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Next week.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.